Voices of VR podcast.
Hello, my name is Ken Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my coverage from Venice Immersive 2025, today's episode is with a piece called Mirage, which is a part of the competition at Venice Immersive 2025. And it's a virtual reality piece that has haptic integrations as well. And so Mirage is about a mother who has a daughter who has depression. And so she's trying to cope and deal with finding out ways that she can best support her. So this is actually done by a mother-daughter team, as well as the sister was a co-writer. And so the daughter with depression was a co-director with her mother. And then her mother co-wrote this piece with her other daughter, who helped to kind of share and reflect upon the different experiences. It's a quill experience that is painted and exploring these different dynamics of their family as they go through coping and dealing with depression. And so it's overall context of mental health and depression and anxiety and family, specifically within the context of a parent and their child and her sibling, accepting help from others is kind of the main theme of how do you actually support and help people within the family when sometimes it's difficult to make that connection. So that's kind of what this piece is exploring. And so the main center of gravity is a very much an emotional presence that's a narrative driven. It's an immersive animation within VR, but the center of gravity is very much like a cinematic experience. And so there are some actual interactions. So it's a little bit more of an interactive narrative of sorts, but I'd say mostly you're receiving the immersive cinematic story, but there are these interactive components that are at these key moments. But I guess the main secondary emphasis is probably the embodied and environmental presence, because you're in this space and it's very much spatially telling the story. The cool animations and also haptic integrations that I think are trying to mimic different aspects of the chest pain and the panic attacks that were happening. And these moments where you kind of embody and interact directly as a parental figure, but also many times where you're just more of a ghostly observer. And so you're not like a character throughout the entirety of the experience. You kind of dip in and out into these key moments that you trying to help your daughter, and you're kind of playing the parent, but these different offerings for help are rejected. And so there's these different moments where you are connecting to your child in this way throughout the course of this piece. And most of the different communication is being through dialogue. And there may have been some voiceover, I don't quite remember specifically. But some of the main themes are around depression, anxiety. And from the description that says, quote, accepting struggles and accepting help from others is not easy for a person suffering from depression and anxiety. Mirage sheds light on the often misunderstood realities of depression and anxiety, inspiring empathy and understanding, and also to bring awareness to the experiences of someone with depression and anxiety. So that's Mirage, and that's what we're covering on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Naima and Alina happened on Saturday, August 30th, 2025 at Venice Immersive in Venice, Italy. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
So my name is Naima Karim. I am the director, the co-producer, the artist, and the co-writer of Mirage. And my background is in Bachelor in Fine Arts.
My name is Alina Hanif. I am a co-creator of Mirage, and my background has nothing to do with XR. I just graduated. I just got my bachelor degree in sustainability science.
Okay, and yeah, maybe you could each give a bit more context as to your backgrounds and your journey into working with immersive media.
This is my second VR experience that I created. My first one was The Anticipation of Rain, which was premiered at IDFA, world premiere at IDFA. And Mirage is my second project that I also created based on my artistic style. I created the visuals using Quill. And I would say that in XR, I'm still pretty new.
For me, when my mom was making Anticipation of Rain, we were kind of involved behind the scenes. She would always come back to us for advice or, you know, whether we liked it or not. And so when she was done with that, she really wanted to make another project that had a very personal story. So she approached me and asked me whether I'd want to work on the next one, which is Mirage. And she wanted to make the experience about our relationship and kind of the journey that happened when I went through my depression and anxiety. And I thought, yeah, why not? I really liked being a part of it before behind the scenes, but I thought it would be really cool to be more in the forefront for this one. Yeah.
Right. So it sounds like a very unique mother-daughter collaboration. And so where did you begin with the story and, you know, the script writing or the development? And where did the idea come from? And just curious to hear the early beginnings of this project.
So when we started thinking about this project, we were mostly thinking of creating the experience as we also learn to know each other more and understand depression and anxiety more. It's also about our relationship that we were trying to learn and also develop. So my younger daughter, she's also involved in this experience as a co-writer. So all three, we were brainstorming initially and thinking of how to have this story not completely based on our experience, but also generalize it a little bit with the other people we spoke to about the same experience they had, kind of similar, but not exactly those things. But also we wanted to share her experience, few moments that we kept in the experience as you can say realistically, but used the landscape. Maybe we were thinking use the landscape as a desert landscape, as is it a harsh and unforgiving place to relate with the struggle in the real life. So we were brainstorming and thinking of the visuals together. All three were thinking of every plot. It iterated along. We did like 1 year of just the ideation, and it changed a lot until it happened. And also we three, when we were talking together, we sometimes had to revisit those moments and unpleasant memories. It was sometimes very tough for all us because all three of us, we made it together, we experienced it together. So sometimes the vulnerable moment came, but we still kept going on because that was our experience that we wanted to bring out there. This is how it began.
I'd love to hear from your perspective, yeah, as well.
Yeah. I think in the beginning, we were playing around with this idea of putting the audience in, or making the audience experiencing it from the perspective of the girl. And that was initially the idea, but then we thought, okay, maybe it's more interesting to come from the other side, so to highlight how frustrating it is to come from the outside and to be the person trying to help the person with depression. And that made our end message that we always had, which was empathy and kindness can make a really big difference in another person's life. It made that part stronger because we really wanted the audience to physically care for this other person. And so then the idea of the hands came, and this idea that it's not actually just one person, it's a whole support system around this girl who's suffering, but this frustration of her not trusting these hands and the fact that they're still trying and that they still want to be there for her. We wanted to highlight that dynamic a lot. And so, yeah, after a lot of discussion and months of discussion, we finally came to this idea of this hands. And we also wanted to highlight that the mom was always still a part of that. So one of the hands has bangles, which was a very special thing for us, because also culturally in Bangladesh, women wear bangles. So we wanted to highlight that one of them was the mother. And so one of the pair of hands has bangles, which is just a small detail for us. And then, yeah, the desert landscape, I think, was always there from the beginning. My depression started when we were in Saudi Arabia. So not to say that we didn't love that landscape, we really did, but it represented this really beautiful landscape that can also be harsh at the same time, and that really represented what goes on in the girl's mind perfectly. Yeah.
And is the entirety of the piece kind of narrated by you and from your perspective, or is the daughter's voice common? I'm trying to remember if it was
It was actually like a little bit like a movie. So it was a conversation going on. Mostly the main character, the girl, is talking to herself. She's fighting her head voice, criticizing her constantly and telling her what to do or that she's failing. But also you can hear the girl's real voice saying, no, I'm trying my best and I don't know what to do. And then the other characters also have some dialogues, like I also, as a mother, was presented there yelling at her at one point because those things actually kind of happened. I did not know that she was suffering, and I did not know, am I spoiling her or am I actually, as a mother, should I push her more? And then sometimes I was really yelling at her. So I also wanted to have this, I shared those dialogues. And then some other people around her were also as a very short character there to represent in general, like how as a teenager girl, their surrounding is sometimes can be very harsh. So it's more of a dialogue exchanging. And that's how we created those things. And like what Alina was saying, that there were some hands. We wanted to show that people sometimes are rude, but it's not because they wanted to be rude, or maybe they don't know that what's going on. Maybe they think as the same like me as parents, that we should actually encourage them, push them more. So they try also sometimes to help them with the hands. What I presented, the hands is like sand, because it's also in the desert, so you can relate. The hands are made of sand. So it's frustrating that a lot of people are trying to help her, but not knowing how to help her. And the trust is not there. Then what happens is the interactivity shows that you try to bring your empathy, but it kind of shatters. It becomes sand when the girl is trying to hold like a grip. It becomes like sand because there is not much trust or not much confidence going on in the relationship.
Yeah, so I guess as an audience member, this disembodied entity with the hands, and there's these moments to interact with the main character as you're stepping in some ways as the parental mother or father figure, and then the daughter, who's the main protagonist that's being featured in the piece, that there's these moments where you try to reach out and give a helping hand, and then it's swatted away, and then the daughter kind of slides down and then comes back up. And then so there's kind of an arc in the story where it's like, how do you find a way to build a bridge and find ways to help? And it sounds like that from the context of the story, that depression is something that you don't have as much personal experience with. And so trying to first understand what it is, but also how to help. And so just curious to hear a bit about that process of trying to tell the story of what has happened in your actual lives, but also trying to condense that down into a short story to kind of go on that journey of understanding and learning, but also how to be there to help.
So the most important thing is to be there for whoever is suffering. So you kind of build a support system around her is the most important thing. So the experience is trying to tell that, yes, it is frustrating, but if you have the empathy and if you are there for her, it will work eventually. How it will work? It's just the intuition, if it's the intention of you being there to help her. So that is how we wanted to design this whole experience. That yes, in the beginning it is frustrating, but you kept trying to help her. At the end you will see that she is also accepting your help. She's understanding that, yeah, I can take the help. Also the audience will understand that, yeah, I was trying, but eventually I could try to help her, give her some support. So that's how the whole story goes from the beginning to end. That's how we designed the story.
Yeah. I don't know if you have any other comments.
Yeah, I think the specific scenes that are shown in the experience are important because we wanted to show that the depression, even though a strong support system is probably what's best for her, that at least for me personally, when I do go through an episode, I tend to isolate myself. And so you don't know in the moment, but that's actually making it worse. And so we wanted to show all of these different important figures in her life kind of being, yeah, those relationships kind of being harmed by this, but then also trying to show that that's probably actually what's good for her. And I think the ending is, for me personally, less about the fact that she's happy and cured and all of a sudden it's just more about the fact about acceptance for me. The fact that she understands that her emotions, everything is not perfect. It's going to keep going up and down, but that she finally has a system of trust around her where it will go wrong, but the help will not always be the type of help that she probably wants or that she needs, but just this idea that there is a person there for you in case you need that support. Yeah.
And what was it like to collaborate with your sister on this project to help pull out and draw out your experiences, but to turn it into the story?
It was probably the best thing I could have done working with her. She saw how it affected me, and it really deeply affected my whole family when I was going through very bad episodes. And she was always that person for me. I think she is like one of the main reasons that I'm still here today. And I think she understands how strong that bond is. And I'm really grateful that it was with her because we have this unspoken kind of thing. And she knew exactly, because for me, my ideas kind of come out very messily and all at the same time. And she writes really beautifully. And she is the reason I think that these experiences are so accessible to different people, because she wrote it so nicely. So I'm really grateful that I was able to do it with her. Yeah.
What was it like for you to collaborate with your daughters on this?
I think it made our relationship even stronger because it's a very vulnerable subject. Sometimes I was a bit afraid to ask her very deep questions. Initially, I tried starting with that. Like, how about I ask you about those moments and what do you think you felt there and what do you think that we should have reacted that time? And I felt like when I initially wanted to do this, I wanted to have her voice recorded. But then she tried it and it was our conversation already, kind of bringing all those memories, which was so sad and kind of going in the wrong direction. So then I immediately stopped. And then we thought, no, we have to approach maybe differently. We have to figure out how to work in this way. So then we sat three together, very relaxed way. We were just not going that kind of direction. But so because my younger daughter, she knew all our experiences. Sometimes she did not have to say maybe all those details that way. Probably she said a little bit and she could catch it already, you know. So that is why it was great to work as a family, because not everything you have to speak. She was there. So whenever she said, like, this is how it went, and then she got it. Her name is Arusha Hanif, by the way, I should mention. She's just starting her second year at Utrecht University. So she was very young when she saw her sister suffer. So for her, those memories were shared in a way. So I feel like it was great to work as a family.
And it sounds like that there was a bit of a year-long ideation process, and you'd already worked on Anticipation of Rain and had developed a little bit of your own aesthetic and style within some of these VR animation programs. And so just curious to hear around the overall process because you have the script, you have the building of the world, you have the aesthetics, you have the music, you have the haptics, you have all these other components and the interactive components that are also being added in, a lot of moving parts. And so just curious how you started to build it out, if it really started with the script or if there was a feedback loop between building it out and going back and sort of iterating. And yeah, just curious to hear this development process and where you started to have a center of gravity on and then build out all these other components.
So initially we were doing the script, but also some color palette ideas, some ideas of how the visuals can go. I already have like a style of painting, which is with long brush strokes, long lines. So tried to do something around the same style. But the color palette changed a lot. Initially, it was a lot black and with only lines that I would like to create silhouette of the characters. But later, I felt like it has to be not only black and white, but some colors, but with the mood, more the transformation to show that in the beginning, she's in a playground, which is kind of her happy place, happy memory, kind of associates with her happy childhood time when she was very little. So that time I wanted to use more like a yellow ochre kind of a bit of a lighter color as to match the mood. And later when it gets very intense with the struggle, then I tried to use a very darker color around it. And every time I was drawing something, we were all sitting together, sharing it with them, and they have also very like strong opinion about what the color can be. So we would like talk together, have those iterations going on. So it was, I think, going parallelly. All of it going, music idea and everything was going almost parallelly. At one point, I was accepted in a residency program in Saudi Arabia by the King Abdul Aziz Center for World Culture, in short ITRA, and that residency program had mentors, so I feel like the mentors helped also to shape the story concise, more like make me do like the storyboard, little bits together, and everything was iterating the same way. The script was getting more better and the storyboard was getting more clearer, and the music we did not work at that time, but we had an idea because both of my daughters are very like much into music. They have we all share a kind of a good, like a common kind of interest in music style. So we were more thinking of the music when the production time came. And we got someone from Alina's high school classmate who was studying as a music composer. So maybe Alina can say better how we actually came about the music style. But that one was developed on the on that phase.
Yeah, so like she said, her storyboard, that's how it started. She painted it on paper. And so at the time, she was still in Saudi Arabia and my sister and I were studying in the Netherlands. So it was a lot of online back and forth. And for the music, yeah, we were very strongly feeling that we didn't want it to be an orchestra. We didn't want to go that direction. We wanted it to be more alternative and more the type of music that we listen to or that I listen to. And so I'm really lucky. I went to high school with a lot of friends who ended up becoming musicians and composers, and I shared their music with my family, and we found that my friend, his name is Cuba Williams, his original music that he already made really matched this style. We wanted it to be very dark and guitar heavy, and yeah, we had a lot of artists as inspiration, but we still wanted it to be his work. And yeah, it was his first time working on any scoring anything. So yeah, it was really cool working with him. Someone who maybe, I don't know if he did see that part of me in high school, but because I was going through depression at the time as well. And yeah, it was really cool to work with someone who I've known since I was like 15. Yeah.
And I can add that also the one of the technical side that I am a very old school 2D painter originally. So all the visuals I created like in cards to organize how the story should go on. So it was playing with the scenes as a cards, and I was putting them forward and backwards to see which part should be where. So it helped me really to build the storyboard and the color board as well. And I used VR tool Quill to create all those characters and the environment, and in the production phase sent them to the studio in Bosnia. The studio is called Aeon Studio, who did the sound designing, the development of the VR app, and also the animation using my assets.
Yeah, here at Venice, I watched the piece two times because the first time I saw it, the haptics were not turned on properly. And so I came back and watched it again, which I really am glad that I had a chance to do, because it is a lot different when you have all the haptics integrated. And I felt like really amplified the story in certain parts and really gave me much more of a deeper sense of embodiment and presence into the story. And also just the way that you can use it to amplify different dramatic parts of the story and the narrative, and give other aspects of like giving someone a virtual hug in a way that gives it much more of a visceral experience than just kind of hugging the air. So yeah, just curious to hear how the haptics started to come onto the development process, and how to, you know, have a strategy for how you were going to integrate the haptics that was trying to create contrast, as to not to just blast people with sensation the whole time, but to kind of use it when it's needed and then not have it. And so having that contrast of no haptics versus haptics creates like the moments when it does come in as especially powerful. So just curious to hear a little bit around this process of integrating the B-Haptics suit for this project.
So what I heard from Alina, a lot of the time it's not only mentally that she was suffering, sometimes it was heavy on her chest, and she would say that it hurts as if like somebody is like sitting on your chest. Sometimes the anxiety would be very heavy and the heartbeat would go like in a panic mode. So I felt like the haptic vest can be enhancing this kind of experience as well, since I tried one of the experience by a UK group. The experience was called In Pursuit of Repetitive Beats with the rave music. Since then, I was very inspired of using a haptic vest somewhere in my future experience. And I thought that's so cool. But yeah, when I thought that she always says this kind of experience she also have when she feels very sad and low, then I thought audience could have this little extra experience that will immerse them even more into these struggles, those times that she was having a heavy chest pain, or the heartbeat will go, or the fall in the experience where she did not know where the ground is. And also the special thing, the hug, that I know that she is the kind of a person that is not like going for hug to everyone, but whenever we are very close and she feels that I'm safe here, she asks for this hug. And we wanted to end the hug feeling in the haptic vest as well.
Yeah, just to hear your experience with the haptics and playing with that, integrating into the story.
Yeah, so as the audience goes through her whole journey, we wanted to have a clear arc in her mood as well. And so the levels of the vest, we wanted to follow with that mood. So there's obviously the heartbeat that you can kind of feel throughout, but we wanted to make sure that during the climax, when it's during the storm, when it's really, really kind of her breakdown moment, that people really feel what anxiety feels like, where your heart is really, really pounding in your chest and really hard to ignore, and it feels very overwhelming. And the music and everything together really is trying to make yeah, almost make the audience feel kind of slightly uncomfortable in a way to understand what that feels like. We wanted to also not have, I think for me, is the heartbeat would completely be gone or not be there in the beginning, because it, I think it's always something kind of in the back of your head, this anxiety that you're trying to control and you're trying to suppress, but then sometimes it goes out of control, and that's why that heartbeat in the beginning kind of is just a teaser of the fact that the anxiety will kind of always be there. We also wanted to use the haptic vest for the kind of shocking movements that were happening, so the falling scene was a very nice way to incorporate the haptics of this vibration going from the bottom to the top of your chest, and the storm scene where you're really feeling this pressure of what her mind can do, but you can feel this pressure physically. So yeah, the haptic vest really, I think, really makes the difference.
Yeah, and the interactions also parallel the story in a way, where you start off and you push the girl in the playground on the swing, so you have this way that you are being able to be this parental guiding figure that's helping, and then you try to give help and the help is refused, and then you can help, and then eventually you get near the end where you're both embracing and giving a hug, but also just holding a hand as a way of, you know, having a metaphoric representation of like a whole community or support, or other people that are also holding hands, not the only one that's there giving support. And so, yeah, just curious to hear around this from the narrative and developing it, but also trying to come up with the interactive parts that could give an amplification of the story that's already being told.
So what I wanted to create is, with the start of the pushing the girl in the playground, is to say that you are part of her closer group. You are the audience, but you are, because sometimes it's hard to touch someone. If you don't know someone, people would not like touching. So audience will immediately think that, should I touch this girl or not? So we wanted to make a closer relationship, that you are kind of her friend. You're kind of in a close relationship. She already know you. That's why she says, hey, now it's your turn. But then when you push her, then you kind of know, okay, it's comfortable to touch her. That way, when the experience goes on and on, you still keep trying to, like, literally give her the hands or somehow comfort her, like petting her hair, just to make her understand that I'm trying. But like I said, that it breaks into sand. The hand disappears because there is no trust. At some point, when it starts to rain, when the girl accepts that I can actually ask for help, and the audience also understand that I think she kind of is accepting my support, or I am going to be successful, at that moment it starts to rain, because the rain is symbolic to me as kind of melt down all your hardship. You're tired of the struggle, you're a little bit vulnerable, but you kind of know that this person is trying to help me and I can ask and take her or his hand. At that time, the rain makes those hands solid, because sand hand goes solid when it's contact with water. It's a symbolic way of saying that the trust and the confidence is built a little bit. You can have a relationship stronger than before. So that way the interaction is giving the audience like frustration in the beginning, but at the end, like, the interaction says that, no, actually your help is working somehow, and the hug is then easier, because you're not going to hug someone if you don't have the relationship between you. So that is how we tried to create the interaction design.
Yeah, if you, anything else that you wanted to add?
Yeah, like my mom said, we wanted to end it on a hopeful note, but it's important to understand the frustration in the beginning in order for the end to really truly feel hopeful. And so that contrast was really important in terms of the interactions. Yeah, and it's interesting to see different people from different cultures and different backgrounds react to the fact that we're really forcing people to help this girl and to caress her in a way. But it's nice to see that people are opening themselves up to help them. And the hug at the end makes a lot of people smile, and that's really nice to see.
I would like to add that I've seen a lot of people, because of this whole journey, a bit frustrated. They keep trying to, if you see the mirror in the mirroring of the experience on the iPad, you would see that people are really kind and trying to help her however they can. Even though there is no interaction, they are trying to hold her and pet her even more, like, I would like to, like, stop her falling, you know? And I've seen some people sit down on the ground, literally fall with the folding knees, and go so close to her and pet her as much as they can, even though it's actually not like that. And then the hug, they just laugh like, ha ha ha, and like as if like, okay, I did it. I actually were able to help you. And that is very important, because it's a very vulnerable story. You don't want other people to affect or trigger something. So to calm them down back to the positive, as a positive note, it was very important to have something beautiful at the end.
I'm curious if you could elaborate on the title of Mirage and why you decided to name it that.
Yeah, so we always had this desert landscape in our minds, and we wanted to come up with a name that embodies that desert landscape. And yeah, we were looking at different names and words related to the desert, and Mirage came up, and then it was Mirage for a while. But then as we kept going, and even today, we're just understanding ourselves how Mirage is actually representing more and more of the symbolic part of the story as well. So yeah, just this idea that you're trying to grasp for this thing and you don't know what it is, so that is Mirage. But also the fact that Mirage can be both this very beautiful but tricky thing, and that the fact that there's this, yeah, kind of elusiveness, this mysterious aspect to it. And yeah.
And I think it's also the hope that we wanted to share. Mirage is something that you look for. You look forward to reach that place, to get something. But it's not that easy to get. Happiness is what we wanted to show as like Mirage, that you are going for happy. People are all the time, that's what they want. They want a little bit of happiness, but it sometimes is very difficult to reach that. So I feel like that is how we ended up with Mirage, that felt exactly how we were thinking the story will match.
And also I think it really highlights the fact that it's different for everybody, because I think that was also from the beginning, we wanted this to connect with all types of stories. And the fact that the Mirage can be so different and that it's so personal, that's why we're just discovering more and more meaning to the word Mirage as we go along. Yeah,
when I think of that as a concept and idea, it's like, what is the material reality and what is the perception or illusionary parts? And so there can be this dialect between, you know, the hardness and realities of life, but then there's also maybe a surface projection. From the outside in, you may look like everything's fine, but from the inside out, you have this real crumbling of your realities, or just real deep, dark depression. Or another reading of Mirage is that there could be some illusionary aspects of, like, the Mirage is not always what you see is there, is what's actually there. So, yeah, I don't know if that...
Yeah, exactly. No, that's a great, yeah.
Even more layers of mirage.
Exactly. Just every time we're just discovering new meanings to the word, and people are also adding new meanings to the word. Yeah, it's really beautiful.
This is a very common question that I've heard from a lot of people. Why did you choose Mirage? I remember in the beginning, the story, we were thinking the name should be Living and Breathing. And then we were like, no, it's not like that meaningful that we were thinking. So Mirage is like, I feel like it gave the whole story, that meaning comes into this one word. And I'm really happy with the name.
Yeah, it's very poetic. It has many, many different layers and meanings that people can read into it. Just curious to hear a little bit about your journey to Venice and if you've been able to see other projects and what it's been like to come from environmental science into this world of XR, the world of your mother and world of storytelling. And just curious to hear any reactions you've had from being here and meeting with people who have seen your piece, but also potentially having a chance to see other pieces.
It's really exciting. It's really, really exciting. My whole family, we've always been very interested in film anyways, and to be part of the festival is really crazy, very surreal. When we found out, we were all screaming. It's really crazy. It's really fun. We've met a lot of very, very cool people. It's really nice to see that people are coming from all different backgrounds and that it's not just like a one persona type thing. Yeah, we've had the opportunity to see a couple of pieces. I saw Less Than 5 Grams of Saffron, which is one of my favorites, I think, so far. And right next to it is The Time Before, which is another favorite of mine. Yeah, I think it's really, really cool to see people's personal style in terms of illustration and animation. And those are also very, very strong messages put into quite short experiences. So yeah, those are very, very impressive to see.
And there are some environmental pieces as well related to you that you're excited to see, yes. And for me, I actually like to come to the festival because I learn so much. When this kind of festival like Venice has the best work, so when you actually go and try other work, you every time learn something. And that's inspiring for me as an artist and a creator. And also to see what is happening contemporary level and what can be in the future, because XR is moving super fast. So it's very hard to keep up with the technical side. But as an artist, I also want to see what is animation-wise and otherwise people are using to collaborate with the technical side. So Venice has been absolutely the best opportunity for me, meeting all the creative people, talking to them, like-minded people, and also learning from them.
Yeah, in terms of animation style, the Midnight Walk is worth checking out. It's here, but it's also released on Steam, but a very unique stop motion type of translation into VR. It's a really distinct style from an animation perspective. And if you do have a chance to go to the Architecture Biennale, highly recommend it, because a lot of the themes are around the relationship of humans to the earth and a lot of ways that architecture and buildings can create more environmentally eco-friendly. Yeah, it was just a really fascinating exhibit. I only had like an hour and a half to zip through it, but you could take 2 to 3 hours or 4 hours to see it. So
I do that. Really want to see. I think we saw some of it maybe because we came to the Biennale a couple years ago, and so I already love that. But yeah, I'm going to try my best to see as much as I can. There's so much to see.
Yeah, for sure. And finally, what do you each think is the ultimate potential of virtual reality and immersive storytelling, and what it might be able to enable?
For me, I would like to add that my journey with VR started with the program that I mentioned, the Creative Solutions Program at ITRA in Saudi Arabia. Honestly speaking, I had no idea about VR AR, but that's when with the residency I learned about the techniques or what this platform can offer. So I would say that Once again, you were saying about VR. Can you mention again?
Just the ultimate potential, you know, of what it might be able to enable.
Yeah, so I feel like it's a great tool. When I learned and also made my first experience, the anticipation of rain, I felt in love with the VR, because as a 2D artist, sometimes I feel like I want to make my audience closer to my what I want to say, but VR gives this opportunity to immerse them even more, even connect, engage people. And after every time I finished my project, it was very stressful and frustrating because I'm not coming from a technical background. And then I might be thinking, oh, what is VR XR going to offer? But then when I finish this project and I see other people's reaction, I feel even more inspired that, oh, it can go so far to connect with audience even better, like the way of what it offers. So I think it should go far. And I just think that a lot of festivals should also encourage this VR XR, because sometimes you can see it's a very small section. I feel like it has a lot of potential, this platform, as with film, with art, collaboration with a lot of things. I think they should just support the work and encourage and teach people how to adopt this platform and engage more and more audience.
Yeah, I think it's a great tool. I think right now, today, everybody's very divided, and I think something like VR can bring a lot of different types of people together behind the scenes when creating the project, but also different audiences. And it's a great tool for storytelling. It's a great way to connect with people because you're involving almost all of the senses, especially with, you know, like her previous project also had scents. And so, yeah, it's really, really cool. I'm really curious to see what happens next.
And one other follow-on question, just really struck by how this whole process of this collaboration with your family, it feels like a bit of a healing process to be able to go back and tell your story. And I'm reminded of something like Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey. You know, one of the ending parts of the Hero's Journey is to come back and to share your story. And I feel like, you know, by the process of telling your story could be a healing journey within its own right. But just curious if you have any other reflections on this overall journey that you've each taken with your family to kind of reflect upon these hard times and what it's been like to tell this story in this way.
Like, sometimes I felt like, oh, I think I understood her. I think she wanted to say this, you know. But then when we were working on this process, I was talking to her, like, do you think you meant this? And then she was like, no, I actually was having this or wanted to say that. And then I was also sometimes saying that, you know, I was reacting like this because I actually wanted to say this, but maybe some different way it came out, or maybe because I did not understand how to react at the situation or handle the situation because no one knew what's happening or how to deal with it. Then this process of creating Mirage, sometimes in some aspects I think talking in a creative way felt like we got a little closer understanding the situation. And that is how we felt, like, okay, that was happening. So then you feel like a little bit of satisfaction. And I feel like that was a bit healing.
Yeah, I think for me it was an opportunity to talk about what I was going through, but also knowing that there was no judgment because we were just making this project and the goal of the project was to share the story. And so we were looking at it from an outside perspective, and I didn't feel like I needed to hide anything because we just wanted to share the truth, and that was the truth. And that was really healing for me because it made me feel even more comfortable talking about it with my mom and my sister. And then also in terms of now of showing it and seeing how people are reacting and them sharing their stories with me, it's really nice to see that I wasn't alone. I think it really feels very, very lonely, and you can get really hard and mean to yourself when you go through episodes like that, because you feel all of those things that the inner critic is saying in the experience, that you feel like they're not really valid feelings because you feel like you're the only person going through that. But it made me realize that actually a lot of people have very similar experiences, whether they're coming from the person who's suffering from the depression or as a person helping. And yeah, it's made me feel, yeah, less alone.
Add that we are demoing at ITRA, because when the program finished, those projects were funded, got the opportunity to show locally, present it with the people in Saudi Arabia. Initially, I was thinking, how would Alina react to this? Because she was talking to us until now. Now it will be public. People would be reacting. Would it be too much for her? Because she had the break right on time when the demo was going on. And luckily, she could come and attend. So I was trying to protect her and kind of way, like, go slow. So people would ask her too many questions. Would it be for her too difficult? But then other people were actually experiencing kind of similar. They were opening up to her, and they were like, can I please give you a hug because you are just here? And then she slowly felt like the one that she was saying, that she was not alone in this situation. There are other people who actually had the same experience, and now they're feeling comfortable with her sharing it. And it was amazing that that time she was feeling also, okay, now it's not, it is difficult to share my personal story, like people are now, they know all about me a lot, but then they are very empathically, the reaction is very nice. So then actually slowly she started to talk more with them and feel a little bit more comfortable.
Nice. Well, thank you both so much for joining me here on the podcast to share a bit more around the story behind Mirage and the process that you made it. I think it's really beautiful collaboration, the family, to be able to have this discussion, this creative process, this healing journey that you've all been on. And yeah, just really appreciate you sharing your story to the rest of the world, and, you know, the struggles of a parent trying to provide support for a child. And yeah, just the interaction and the animation and the haptics and the music all ties together in a way that really brings all the points that you're trying to make home. So thanks again for joining me here on the podcast to help break it all down.
Thank you so much, Kent. And I also, if I can add, that I really want to thank the whole team once more, the team in Bosnia who did the development and the sound design and the animation, Mladen and Nemanja and Sandra, and the team in the Creative Solutions program, Ala and Maram and Hamdi, and the Venice team who brought us here, Liz and Michelle. So I just want to thank everyone for this great opportunity and believing in our project. And of course, you for this great interview. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thanks so much for tuning into this Venice Immersive 2025 coverage. And hopefully you found some use in some of this documentation of these experiences that are very ephemeral. And some of these show at these festivals and they don't really go out widely beyond this a lot of times. I mean, maybe they are, but you may not be in a place that it's easy for you to see them. And so it's a real privilege to be able to see all these experiences, but also to be able to sit down with these creators and have a really deep, in-depth conversation in a way that there are not a lot of other opportunities to really dig into at this level. And so I really appreciate all the time from all the creators to be able to have these conversations, but also for you to take the time to listen to them. And also, it's been a challenge of trying to find a way of speaking about these experiences in an abstract, theoretical way, or at least in a way that I can ground it and allow you to put yourself into the experiences to kind of imagine some of these different things that they're doing, how I'm experiencing it, but also the different types of design decisions that the creator is making. So if you find this useful and want to support this type of effort of both documenting the history of immersive storytelling, but also to support this kind of wildly ambitious independent journalism project that is very much driven by support by listeners like yourself. So please do consider becoming a member of the Patreon at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.